about the re-entry RFP, the helpline, and the restorative training, restorative justice training. So Anna, you're nodding as if you want to share.
Sure, sure. John and myself and the sheriff and Evelyn from his office met and talked about the reentry grant a few weeks ago. John and I have been diligently drafting language, and I actually just sent it over for their review today. So we also spoke to Nancy, who has been in communication with Family Woodstock about that grant. And they apparently received a letter saying that they were going to find out the status of that grant in December. So if it's okay with everybody, I would personally propose waiting, like getting all of our ducks in a row, making sure the language is good to go, but waiting to issue the RFP until we know whether or not Family Woodstock is getting the grant that would have a very similar scope of work.
Right. Okay. That's great. The sheriff shared it with me, so I'll certainly be looking at it, my input as well. And then the helpline?
Sure. I spoke to Tyrone today, and he said that he's been working with the sheriff to figure out kind of who on his team he should be communicating with when he does receive calls. He's also going to be working with IS to set up a 1-800 number so that that could be separate from the current number that people call for human rights issues. And then he's also going to be working on an advertising campaign, because I believe that that resolution came with a budget for this year. So he's hoping to figure out, you know, should we do social media or wrap some buses? But he's hoping to launch something probably in December to announce the new 1-800 number and right. And everything.
And the part-time person appeared on his budget.
Yep. So he will have a second part-time person. And really that's mostly because, you know, we would have a full-time person, but he loves his current part-time person. So we're going to have two part-time people instead of one full-time person. And then lastly, the restorative justice trainings. I also reached out to a lot of people on this call today to get a list of the employees that would need this training so that we can work with Dana Katz at Family Woodstock to set up a schedule of when each employee would receive the trainings. And she's totally on board with it at Family Woodstock. It's already included in the contract with Family Woodstock that she would do these monthly trainings. So, it won't be any additional cost to the county, which is great.
Perfect. Thank you for that update. Yeah. Anyone have questions about? Yeah, Sheriff.
First, Anna, thank you for emailing that. That actually was well written, so thank you. We're gonna look at that and get that back to you. And yes, we're gonna definitely look at that training. She sent the PowerPoint, and it's actually very, very good. So we're probably gonna send some folks so we can get everybody trained up. So again, I thank you.
Great.
Any legislators have any questions about those outstanding issues? Well, not outstanding, those continuing issues. Terrific. So with that, seeing legislator parity here, I'll call the meeting officially to order. I have a motion to approve the October 6th meeting minutes and transcripts. Legislator Haynes, second?
Yeah, I'll second it.
Second, legislator parity, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Any opposition? No? Okay. So we're going to do budget review. At this point, we are looking to hear from each of the different departments. Really, the highlights are things we should know that might be new, things that we should know that are going away, and whether there was something that you really felt you needed in the 2022 budget, but weren't able to get that you would like us to consider advocating for as budget amendments. Okay, so things that are new we should know about, and things that are going away, and things that you would like to have a wish list. So as what I understand for safety, Director Vito could not be here. And we got an email with an update of just what they're doing and where they are. So I'm going to move to the sheriff next. What's new, what's old, and what's new, what's gone, and what do you want that you didn't get?
So good afternoon, everyone, and thank you, Madam Chair. Of course, we've got everything that we pretty much have asked for. We've gotten the AVERT program. That's one detective and a deputy sheriff. And then the professional standards division that's going to be stand up with a supervisor that's going to be responsible for internal affairs and audits. That's extremely important, especially in today's world of law enforcement. Should never be a collateral duty, nor should it be a member of a union. So we're looking forward to doing that. And we had agreed that the second part of that, the crisis intervention detective, that we would probably put that in place in July. And I worked those details out with Bert. So if you see where it says the detective deputy sheriff, and you'll see the figure 33,499, it's because we're starting it in July and not for the whole year. We wanted to focus on AVERT first and then work our way over to the crisis intervention detective, which is again, involving offshore wellness and how we deal with critical incidents within the organization. As we know, hurt people hurt people. So I'm extremely happy about that. The other thing that's new that's not in there that we're going to have to amend is that of the Black Creek. So when we initially put in the Black Creek, we had to amend it once already, and then come to find out we don't have the right coaxial cabling. So we're waiting to hear back. It's out for bid, and it could estimate, we don't have a number, but it could go between $400,000 and $600,000 more on that. Mm-hmm. Remember, Black Creek is the overall program that does all the cameras and all of the security systems for the Ulster County Jail. It has not been updated since 2007. It was on the capital project for the last 2 years, but obviously it was taken off because of the unknown because of the pandemic and the revenues that the county was going to get. Melody, did I leave anything out?
No, sir. I think you've covered all the new stuff.
Can I just ask a question before you move on to things that are gone or things that you need, if there are any? So part of the CIT was money towards the Criminal Justice Reform Task Force. It included money for trainings, recognizing that de-escalation trainings could be quite expensive. So did you put in money for more training so more officers across the whole county can have those trainings?
Yes, so that's also in there. And that has not been changed. So that training is in, not just for members of the sheriff's office, but for local municipalities in the county. And I want to really touch base on the professional standards, which is really not just internal affairs to the office, but auditing the different divisions within the office. But equal employment opportunity, which we sent somebody in my first year of office, compliance down to Berkeley, down in the city, that's going to be under that office, as well as background investigations. That EEOC compliance officer will also be available to anybody in the county and any municipality in the county. That crisis intervention detective, when he gets trained up, will also be available not just to law enforcement or first responders and insurance office, but everybody in the county.
And then the other thing was, when we were reviewing with the Ways and Means capital programs together, Black Creek was in there.
It is in there, but we amended it once, and then we had to amend it again because electrical component of that was left out, and that is that of the wiring and the coaxial cables. The cameras are IP cameras that are new. We are using analog cameras, so they won't work without the cable.
So the one that worked, we just are reviewing now, you're saying will have to be updated.
There'll be an additional one, an additional amendment. And where are we with that, Melody?
The bid is due back November 10th, and the hope was to have that back by the 10th to be able to send the amendment in for the December meeting.
And for those that don't know, we lost one of our, basically the first sergeant of the sheriff's office who ran that system for many, many years and put a lot of Band-Aids on it, and that's Officer Chris Howell. His loss is just unbelievable. And at this time, I mean, again, when somebody retires and he comes back off retirement to help us, and then this happens, it's just devastating. So that's another side reason as to why that wasn't included in the initial offer, because we didn't know.
Legislator Haynes.
You know, it's funny, Sheriff, you mentioned that, because I'm sitting here and I'm thinking of Chris when we're speaking about Black Creek, but I didn't realize he had offered to come back to help.
I brought him back as a part-time CO to help me with this project.
Oh, wow.
Because it hasn't been upgraded in years, and he knows that system and the entire building inside and out.
Yeah.
Let him rest in peace. He was a great man.
Amen.
Anything else, Sheriff, or anything for the sheriff? All right, thank you. Next, we have the district attorney.
Hello, everybody. The main thing we've done this year is to add a discovery unit and to reorganize the office. Rebecca, could you put that org chart on so we can talk about it?
Jay, can you let me screen share? I have it.
So this is the new structure of the office. We have a discovery unit, which has been implemented with the support of the legislature and the county executive. It's a key component to us being able to address the amount of work that now requires this office to be doing on a daily basis to respond to discovery under fairly extreme time constraints and with digital amounts of information that are at some points overwhelming, but we're now getting it under control. So that's a good start. We have just hired somebody who's going to be our Justice Courts and Diversion senior unit chief. We are now actually, for the first time as of December 6th, we will be fully staffed for the first time since I've come into this office, which will be a great deal of help and support for everybody who's been working tremendously hard over the last year and 9 months. We have the narcotics and guns unit. We have Shanza Malik is somebody who's taken on that responsibility. I need to tweak the lines of the unit chiefs a little bit. We have one person who was in a senior unit chief position, and I can drop her down to just a unit chief position in order to allow Shanza to be elevated to the unit chief position, which I want to place her in. She's been doing tremendous work with Urgent, as the sheriff knows. They're doing a lot of great things over with the fellows there at the sheriff's office and the men and women there. So it's something that we're very proud of. We're working very hard, and we have a major crimes unit and a special victims unit. We're now promoting people who have been involved in our IPVI program for the last number of years and are heading that. As you know, we've gotten a $500,000 grant to support the expansion of the IPVI throughout the county, including the Sheriff's Department. We have a new financial and cyber crimes chief unit person, and we are now approaching the time when we can actually fulfill all of these unit chief spots and move ahead. So I'm very pleased with that. The one issue that I would like to address, and I'm not sure if the legislature is in a position to do anything about it right now, but we are constrained by space to a large degree. The sheriff has been very generous with allowing us space in the LEC, and we're just about out of space. In fact, we have, through that grant that we've gotten from the Department of Justice, the ability to hire a trauma-informed investigator, and we don't have a place to put that person. So as we move forward, I hope the legislature and the executive's office will help support us in finding space that we can consolidate this office in a way that will be more effective in the work that we're doing. Our building here, the courthouse, is very constrained. We have very limited space. Our discovery unit is now having 3 and 4 people in a small, not a small office, a regular size office space. But that's one concern that I have. That's one of my wish list areas. Otherwise, I'm open to any questions that anybody has.
Thanks. You want to take down the presentation? So I assume the preference is that you find a singular space that incorporates everyone, or would it be sufficient to find space that's can cover other people? And I guess the reason why I ask is I don't know if Anna or John have thought about, in the conceptualization of like the mental health hub, whether a trauma-informed specialist might fit somewhere there. I would get for efficiency why you'd want them all under one roof, but and you don't have to answer it now, but really think about whether you're looking for a whole new space that fits everybody or just reasonable space for people who aren't fitting.
Right. The one thing that comes to mind is that the Board of Elections is leaving the space across the street from here. I don't know where that is right now, if that's a possibility in the future, which would allow my staff to be closer to each other as we move forward. Obviously, we have a number of ADAs over at the LEC. That means they have to get in the car every time they have to appear in court and drive back, and there's loss of time. And if that were an option, that would be helpful. If that's not a possibility, I don't think there's any immediate hope that we could all fit under one roof. So we'd have to go to the plan B or C to find a space for that person.
Okay, thanks. Any questions from any of the legislators? All right, thank you. Thank you. Next we have Deputy Director Naccarato for probation.
Hi, Jay, could I share my screen?
Sure.
Thanks. Let me just pull this up. All right, it's not popping up, which. Apologize, it's not coming up. Let me try this again.
Not me, is it?
I don't think so. It's just had it open, but it wasn't. There it is. Okay. All right. Is that coming up now?
Yes, that's there. Okay.
Thank you. All right. So I'll just briefly go through this. I had separated out our different divisions because we have 8 different divisions. So I just kind of looked at each one. And probation, which is our main division, basically, I think there's just a couple of changes in that is we added or requested an additional administrative assistant position because we're finding that we just... when Sandy Crum left, we really were in a bind, and we have a lot of our management staff are doing a lot of the administrative. So we requested that position. And we also put in for some additional vehicles. There's been a problem getting vehicles. I believe we had some in the capital plan, but we still have not gotten any vehicles this year, which I believe there were some in there, but we've lost, I don't even know how many vehicles over the past couple of years because they were just so old that they didn't pass inspection. We had one that got hit by a boat, literally got hit by a boat. It sounds funny, but it was. Somebody backed a boat into it, totaled that out. So we did put for three additional vehicles in the budget. And I believe that comes out of the reserve that Bert handles. And we also put in all of our weapons are basically coming to the end of life. The night sights would need to be replaced. The guns, I believe, are over 12 years old, but we basically we can trade them in. So it's more cost effective to trade them in and get a new gun rather than try to replace the sights, which are basically at the end of life. So that was an increase in that. And police radios, I believe there was a resolution already. So the legislature is aware of that. We want to switch from we have two separate radios, depending on which agency we're going to be working with. I believe Kingston, Saugerties, and Town of Ulster are all on one radio and the rest of the counties on the other. So we've asked NICOMCO to do a all-in-one so that the officers don't have to carry two different radios depending on where they're doing their field work. So that was the increase in the contractual expenses. Crime victims, they're most largely funded through grants. We have, the county requested, there was two part-time crime victims counselors from the Family and Children's Advocacy Center. They've asked us to take them over, and we asked if we could, instead of having two part-times, have one full-time. So that will be interdepartmental revenue from that for our crime victims program. And I think that was really the only new things with crime victims. The health grant is just primarily, we have, I think, 1.5 of our crime victims staff funded under that. It's a grant, and it also pays for the hotline. The hotline cost increased quite a bit this past year. So that's why that expense went up. Stop DWI, which is entirely self-funded through fines, and they determine that amount through the advisory board, and it's adjusted. So we've been lowering that because their fine money's been lowering. So we just pretty much that we kind of even out. We also had Sandy Dawe, who was our she was our full-time senior probation assistant. She reduced to part-time in the spring of 2021. And then she had decided to retire completely in July. So we've absorbed that position into one of our staff that's funded under the 1835 line. So that was why the salary reduced in that. That's about the only change on that one. Pre-trial, we did have a slight increase on revenue on that because the grant that we get through DCJS, which had been split between community service, pretrial, defender-based advocate, and conflict defender-based advocate, has now just all the money is coming to us now for the pretrial and community service. So it's the same amount coming into the county. It's just split differently now. And the reduction, the salary reduction that you see was when in the start of bail reform, we had anticipated we might have a huge increase. So we had put in for another probation assistant, Spanish speaking. We never did fill that. COVID hit, then we did, the numbers were lower. And at this point we're holding steady. So we don't have that. That we did have an independent agency was doing a study of bail reform, and they went to five counties, and we were one of them, and we were able to get a lot of data looking at how things had changed with bail reform. So the four other counties didn't give them all the data, but they were able to extract a lot of data and a lot of information. And what we're seeing with the pretrial, the numbers are holding steady, but the the cases that we're getting are much more difficult, I want to say, much more, they have a lot more needs. So it's the numbers are the same, but it's a lot more work. but they're managing right now. And so we're okay on that. This division is just the grant. It's the GIVE grant, the gun involved violence elimination. And it goes in that division. So I just left that there. That just went up a little bit. Raise the age. You'll see a difference from 2020 to 2022, but I believe that was because the 2020 was estimated. We did have a reduction in the salaries because the assistant youth and family engagement coordinator we originally had put in for, we never filled it. We didn't feel there's a need for it. Raise the age, there hasn't been much changes. We've changed some of the services. We found some were not being utilized. So we've moved that around. We did add an adult restorative justice program, I believe in the 2022 budget. So that's been added. We've also been using restorative justice for violations of probation and restorative Ulster, which we do in conjunction with the district attorney's office. And that, let's see, we've had 8 referrals on that and 4 have been completed. For the technical violations, we received 7 referrals and we completed 5. And the school base, that's the new one that just started. So I don't have any stats on that yet. So that's new, the school based restorative justice. And that began, I believe, August or September. So we just don't, it's just getting up and running. Community service. It's pretty much, it was, nothing's changed, nothing new. We continue to run it. We did have much lower numbers due to COVID, and we're hoping to, and we kind of moved, we were able to move funding around for that to put more, the state allowed us to put more to pre-trial, which did have the numbers. And so we maximized the return for that grant by moving the numbers around. But other than that, no changes. And that was it.
Great. Does anyone have any questions?
I have a question for Valerie.
Sure.
The probationers who are allowed to participate in the restorative justice program based on an allegation of a violation of probation, do they have to meet the same criteria as if they entered the restorative justice program without being on probation? For example, the type of crime and the age of the person?
We do look at, I don't know if it's the same criteria. What we do for a violation of probation is low level violation. We look at what the violation is. Obviously, if it's something, you know, very serious, then we do go through a violation of probation. But if it's something, you have someone on for a DWI and they get a petty larceny. So, you know, they get convicted of that, but that's not, it's not something that I would bring them back to court for, but maybe we'll do restorative justice with that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think some of them were, one I know was the person wasn't going to substance abuse treatment. So we got the treatment provider and I think maybe one of his family members and kind of did a circle about how you not doing treatment and continuing to abuse drugs is, you know, could ultimately lead to you returning to court. But, you know, this is how it's affecting your family and all of that. And it actually went really well. So I haven't been directly involved in any of them. So I'm not sure what the other ones are, but it's, they'll meet with the supervisor and any ones that we feel like, hey, this is something that'll work, then, you know, let's do it. And so it's, I don't know that it has the same exact criteria.
Thank you.
Your deputy is having a audio difficulty. There she is. Hi.
Sorry about that. I couldn't unmute myself. Okay, well, thank you very much, Valerie. Does anybody else have any other questions? Okay. Everett, you're up.
Thanks, Heidi. Thanks.
Sorry, Eve.
That's okay.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to just try sharing this real quick. Everybody can see that all right?
Yep.
Thank you. So the Department of Emergency Services, some key highlights. Total expenditures proposed for the division is combined is $5,677,174. Total revenues for the division, for all the divisions combined, is $2,525,044, leaving the county responsible for $3,153,130 of the entire department's expenses. The mission and vision of our department is to provide the residents and visitors of Ulster County with rapid access to emergency response system that is professional, compassionate, and highly capable in order to save lives and reduce the effects of disaster. And the functions of emergency services Ulster County are comprised of the traditional emergency responders, such as police, fire, emergency medical services, along with the 911 dispatchers and their entire emergency management community. The common goal of these groups is to save their lives. There are thousands of members of the emergency services community, ranging from career personnel to volunteers, which a majority of our fire services is all volunteer in Ulster County. Only one of the is career, which is pretty incredible. These men and women work around the clock to ensure the safety of Ulster County citizens. They do it with compassion, dedication, and professionalism. So our department is broken up into five divisions, but three of the divisions are covered in one line. So emergency communications, emergency management, emergency medical services is covered under one line. And then fire services and fire investigation are both broken out. So looking at the public safety communications, the 2022 Ulster County Executive Budget proposes $5,416,753 in total appropriations for the Department of Emergency Services, Public Safety Communication. The revenue of the Department of Emergency Services and Public Safety Communications are proposed at $2,525,044, again, leaving the county responsible for $2,891,709. All of our revenues come in through public safety communications. That's where we're able to access a lot of our grants. So that's where we end up housing them. So looking at 3020 public safety communications, which again is emergency management, the 911 center and EMS, you look at a difference in wages. Most of those increases in the salary wages there is due to us housing the funds for the vaccine pod for the volunteers. All the pay comes out of our department. So $500,000 of that difference is right there. And then obviously the CSEA contract that changed, that's where the increase is. Professional services has dropped because the pandemic services is not funded through our department in 2022. So that's why you'll see that huge decrease there. Conferences, we have added that because we're looking to send additional personnel to attend our Tyler conferences. Tyler is the CAD system that we use, the computer-aided dispatch system, which is now a countywide system shared between law enforcement, fire, and EMS. We just recently promoted one of our supervisors to a CAD administrator to work with all the agencies. It's a huge lift there, and we're looking to send more people to participate in those conferences. And we actually have one of our employees who sits on committees that actually drives where the system is going to go. So that allows us in Ulster County really be ahead of the curve when changes are going to be made, and it allows us to put in firsthand input to what changes will be made moving forward in the CAD system, which is very, very good for us. Maintenance is all on the 911 equipment maintenance, radio system, tower sites, and so on. And then communication expenses is for fiber and new additional tower sites. And this is basically diversity. Diversity is the basically the a second route in to back up our microwave system. We obviously have our primary route, but then to ensure that we don't go down, we have to have that second means. So just a quick graph that breaks it down on percentages on what it looks like. Revenue for our department is, break this down here. The non-property tax item is our VOID, wireline, and prepaid wireless, basically not 911 surcharges. The intergovernmental charges was dispatched for City of Kingston that sunset last year. So we no longer get that $25,000 a year from the City of Kingston to dispatch them. The state aid is our PSAP grants, and the federal aid is our SHSP grants. This is a breakdown graph of our revenue with percentages. Fire services, we added a we now employ, we just hired him this year, the training coordinator. And then we lowered the equipment and supplies line by using 911 surcharge funds and 3420. So that's where you see that drop in equipment and supplies. 911 surcharge funds is allowed to be used towards training of the fire service. So we did tap into that to help keep our budget stable. A graph for fire services, percentages. The fire investigation unit, this past year, we filled all our open investigator positions. And then there's an increase in professional services, obviously, which is an unfunded mandate and require mandatory training for all our fire investigators. 921 and the state requires a specific amount of training. That's mandated on the 15 investigators. And then increase in travel as the fire investigators now do submit for mileage. And there's a breakdown in the percentage of that section for fire investigations.
Thanks. Questions from legislators? I have a couple of questions. One, with the expected plan to move emergency services and 911 to the new location, does that come along with any expansion of services, or is it just the right size kind of move?
The building we're looking to build out does have additional positions for dispatchers. As well as for the mental health clinician within the 911 center. Building out a building that we're going to be housing for many years to come, we can't build based off of our current size. Tourism is constantly, there's a huge influx in tourism in our county. And as that happens, and as people move into our county, our call volume will go up, which will eventually require us to hire additional dispatchers. So we can't just build out 8 consoles to have an up-to-date 911 center. We have to build out larger. And we did look at that. Also, you look at other counties, you do see a consolidation in dispatch centers, regarding localized dispatch centers, and it usually ends up falling at a 911 center. So that's taken into consideration as well for future build out there and allowing the possibility for that to happen.
Right, so for 2022 budget, Are there increased salary, increased program and increased services? Like, are these dispatchers or are these enhancements in the 2022 budget, or that you're just saying those are ones you're expecting to have once that build out is done?
As of right now, there's no increase in dispatchers. It's status.
Okay, so those are all things you're hoping to do when you move, but the 2022 budget doesn't have an expansion of services.
No, there is no expansion of services as dispatchers. No.
But expansion in services in...
It all depends on call volume.
Sorry. So in the 2022 budget...
There is no expansion of services.
Related to the move.
Correct.
Okay. That's what I'm wondering.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay. And would there be any reduction? Do we own the building that we're in now?
Yes.
Okay. So that wouldn't change. And then, it's come up several times, I feel like, in the last, 2 years or 20 years of the challenge of not having enough volunteer firefighters. Are you having a planned with this new hire or expanded hire, expanding your outreach and training opportunities? Like, do you have a model of how you're going to potentially identify and train more volunteer firefighters?
I mean, over the past couple of years, we've constantly added training. In the past couple of years, we've added county fire instructors. We've added this training coordinator to assist with offering more county training, which would be more advanced compared to the state classes that are just basically offered on a regional basis. That has helped us with increasing participation at training. But there's a lot that's based off of the local jurisdictions bringing personnel in. And that's the hard part right now. I mean, we put out lots and lots of training, but it's the departments bringing volunteers in. We continuously try to help them. Now with, the changes in COVID and the restrictions being, some of the restrictions being lifted, we're looking at, part of the budget is the Explorer program to help with that. So we're looking to get that up off the ground. And we're hoping that helps, because that will drive into the high school, grabbing those individuals that are even under 16, 14 years old, and getting them trained to when they turn 16, they have all the training already and they can actually participate and go to fire calls. So
that's great. I mean, that was something I was really hoping to do with the high school SART legislator Hefner. Is that program expected to be potentially available to all the high schools or just some?
That would be available to all the high schools.
Wonderful. Okay. Legislator Hefner.
Thank you. And thank you, Everett, for all your work and the people that work for you. One consideration, have you considered in your budget a flyby system for EMS services? I know Eve mentioned, the lack of, volunteer firefighters, but that also carries over to EMS services. And I know, for example, the district I represent, at times they get calls to, across the Shokan Reservoir. So I'm just considering if you guys have, thought about that concept.
On EMS, our EMS coordinator is working with the agencies to trying to boost their numbers. The biggest issue that arises when trying to get volunteer EMTs is the commitment of their training, and then the on tax time, we call it, of an EMT on a call. So when an EMT goes on a call, they're looking at a minimum 60 to 90 minutes of on task time. So that's really hard to get that commitment. We're trying to work through that. John has us really digging down into the data of EMS right now throughout our county. We are working on that.
Because also just to add to that, obviously the volunteer aspect is crucial, but I was going to, say, is it worth it at some point for our county to look at paid fly car EMS?
So a fly card puts an EMT at on the scene. Our main thing though is how do we get these people to the hospital? You know, that's really what we need to look at. I mean, we see it all the time now that, you know, they'll get an EMT at the station, but by law, that ambulance can't leave with one EMT alone. Okay. You have to have two. You need someone to drive and someone to provide patient care. So Part 800 requires that. Can't just leave. So it's more of that, getting that partner there, and how do we look at that? And like I said, I mean, the county executive's office does have us drilling down into the EMS issue currently.
Thank you.
Thanks. Anyone else have any questions? All right. Last but not least, we have the public defender, Ruth Boyer.
Good afternoon, everyone. So what's new is that in the past year, we have been able to expand our offices at 280 Wall Street. We've built 6 new offices on the third floor. We had previously occupied only the second floor, and an additional conference room as well. And that was paid for by funding from a state grant administered by Indigent Legal Services. And that grant also allowed us to expand and pay the rent, also as it allows to increase our staff. So the point of that grant is to reduce attorney caseloads, specifically in public defender offices, so that the representation can be more effective and at a higher level. So we have been able to add criminal attorneys to the staff as well to that end. Our proposed budget is $4.2 million, and 1.7 of that is revenue received from the state grant, which was implemented in 2019 and continues to go. So over a 5-year period, they're funding the office $8.7 million, which has allowed us to make a lot of improvements and great strides in just providing better representation. Another purpose of that grant, which we have implemented starting in 2019, but much more fully in the past year, is the Counsel at First Arraignment Appearance Program, which we call CAFA. And that program funds one full-time attorney that does arraignments throughout the 23 justice courts in the county court in the county during normal business hours, and also permits us to have 10 attorneys, staff attorneys, who additionally provide overnight arraignments anytime that the office is not open. So 5:01 p.m. to 8:59 a.m., weekends, holidays. So literally 24/7, anybody who is charged in Ulster County is represented by an attorney at their arraignment, no matter which court it's in the county or what time of day or night it is. So that's, again, something that's funded by the state grant, which has greatly allowed us to improve the services that we provide to the residents of Ulster County. The county funds pay for 22 of the 32 employees of the office, salaries and benefits. So our divisions are criminal and family. We currently have 18 criminal attorneys. 7 of those attorneys are dedicated to doing felony work exclusively, from any level felony up to murder. The other attorneys handle the justice courts, of which there are 23, all levels of offenses, all stages of representation. We also have 3 family court attorneys that the county funds, the attorneys and all the support staff associated with those attorneys, who represent parents and family court in matters of child neglect and abuse allegations, as well as custody issues and child support cases. So the office for budgetary purposes is split into 4 divisions. All the attorney services that I've just described, in addition to a defender-based advocate, and that person is tasked with tailoring individual
treatment programs as an alternative to incarceration, where clients have issues, unaddressed mental health issues and substance abuse issues, which have been determined to be a major reason why they've come into contact with the criminal justice system. And I can take questions at any time during the presentation. Now, for example.
Well, I have, are you, for the COP, are you still implementing the quadrant model that Kosover had developed?
I am actually at the moment reviewing and revising the quadrant model for the overnight arraignments. And the reason for that is that the way that the quadrants are drawn, one quadrant has many, many more overnight arraignments than the other. So I've evaluated the number of arraignments in each quadrant over the past year of 2020. And just for an example, one of the quadrants had approximately 300 overnight arraignments and another only had 30-ish. So I'm, because I do have 10 overnight, 10 CAFA attorneys handling the overnight arraignments, I am evaluating where the arraignments are mainly taking place to try to even out those lines. So there won't be quadrants going forward in 2021. There'll be many more sections that the county will be divided into for that purpose.
That's great. I had gotten some feedback from judges who were, some of them were super happy with overnight and some were very unhappy. So I imagine you'll be able to get to the bottom of that.
I have spoken with the happy ones as well as the unhappy ones. And that's one of the reasons why I am taking a much closer look at how these lines have been drawn, making modifications that hopefully will make more of the judges happy.
Great. We all want the judges happy.
We do. Yes, we do.
Any other questions at this point? All right. Do you have more? Or...
I mean, I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay, I didn't, when you said it, it sounded like you might've been pausing between your presentations, but your presentation is done.
I can say that we do have still the ability to fill a family court full-time attorney position and two criminal positions that are also funded by the state grant. And I'm actively looking for attorneys to do that again with an eye on reducing the public defender caseloads. I think that the office is in a very positive place and going in the right direction.
Great, thanks. A second call, if any legislators have any questions? All right, terrific. I guess the last, it didn't sound like I would assume you brought it up, and this would go for you and for Everett and for Valerie, is if there was anything that you were hoping for 2022 that you weren't able to get into the budget that you would like us to consider. You know, you can either talk about it now or you can email me separately and I could present it to the other legislators.
Actually, it's not something that I didn't get. I did ask for a social worker position to be funded, which was granted, and that will also add greatly to the quality of our representation for clients who have issues other than just their criminal allegations.
So you did get that added?
We did.
Oh, great. That's terrific. All right. Anything else? All right. So with that, we will move to the resolutions. If you don't have a resolution on, it's up to you whether you want to stay. If you do, we ask that you stay on so we can ask you questions. The first one is resolution 426, amending the Ulster County budget to create a professional standards supervisor position. I will just say that resolution 426, 427, and 428 were all the ones that we continue to postpone, waiting to see. They all are on the budget. I don't know whether you feel comfortable withdrawing them yet. Should we wait to the budget approves? Should we just postpone them once again? or at least for another year. I mean, not a year, another month.
Can I move to block them and postpone them?
Okay, so there's a motion to block them.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, all in favor of the block?
All right.
And then a motion to all in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Okay. And then again, a month from now, we may just decide to withdraw them if they exist, in fact. Great. Next, we have resolution number 526, authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute an MOA with the Federal Emergency Management Agency for an integrated public alert and warning system. And this is emergency management. Motion to discuss.
I'll move it.
Second.
Legislator Haynes, any discussion? Any questions for Everett?
No.
All in favor of resolution 526?
Aye.
Okay. Next we have 527, amending the capital project 482 countywide radio system for the Department of Emergency Communication. Motion to discuss.
Move it.
Second. Okay, any discussions or questions? All right, all in favor of resolution 527?
Aye.
Any opposed? No, okay. Resolution 530, approving the Ulster County's 2022 Stop DWI program and authorizing the chair to execute all intermunicipal agreements required under the plan. Motion to discuss?
Move it.
Second. So I'll just ask, Valerie, you mentioned that the revenue was going down. I assume, does that mean we have less people who are driving while intoxicated?
I don't know if we have less people driving while intoxicated, but maybe, I think prosecutions were down because of COVID. So I believe, I'm not positive on this, but I believe they look at prior years. So I would guess it's probably because that there was less court processing going on through COVID. I don't know if that's accurate, but that's what I would assume.
Right.
It would be nice to say that there's less people driving right. while intoxicated.
I imagine during COVID, less people potentially drove for a little while there, but.
Probably.
All right, all in favor of resolution 530?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Resolution 531, approving an execution of a contract for $276,243 for legal services of the Hudson Valley. Motion to discuss.
Move it.
Second. Any discussions or questions for probation?
No.
Okay, all in favor of resolution 531?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Jonathan, you want to vote yes or no for 531? Yes. resolution number 532, appropriating the funds from insurance revenues for the replacement of vehicle. Motion to discuss.
Move it.
Second.
Second.
Under sheriff, is this the vehicle that was hit by a boat?
It's jail transport.
It was, no, I don't think that was the one that was hit by the boat. Oh, okay. That is pretty unique.
Okay. All in favor of resolution 532?
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Great. Resolution number 533, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $31,680, causing the aggregate to be in excess of $50,000 entered in the county for Anderson Medical Emergency One Urgent Care Diagnostic Center. Motion to discuss?
Move it.
Second. Under Sheriff, can you just tell us what this is for?
I have Melody here.
Melody, will you tell us what this is for?
This is just to add funding to the contract to be able to pay our COVID testing for our corrections officers. We've met the cap on the contract and we have open invoices.
Great, thank you.
Yep.
All in favor of resolution 533?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Any new business? Old business, Legislator Perry, I'd ask, but he's not there. Jay, do you have any update from Legislator Perry on his interest in pulling people together?
The last I had heard was it was his intention to reach out to people after Election Day. So I imagine I will hear from him this week or next and have an update for you all probably by email.
Great. Thank you. Any other old business? All right. I know Anna has a meeting at 5 o'clock, which, right? Is the mental health meeting at 5 o'clock?
I don't think so.
Oh.
Now you have me nervous. What is this mental health meeting that I'm not at?
Board meeting? No?
No, no, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. I'm crossing off my calendar then.
There's a community services board.
I thought that
it was mental health. Is that a subcommittee one though? I think it's a subcommittee
yes.
one.
Okay, sorry.
I don't go to the subcommittees. I draw a line.
Okay, well, anyway, motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Legislator Hefner, second. Legislator Haynes, all in favor? Okay, thank you all.
Thank you.